Over the past few weeks, we've spoken to 100 sales leaders around the world to understand the impact of COVID-19 on revenue. And we've combined these insights into one single report that covers the immediate impact, the commercial outlook, the tech stack that you need, and actionable advice for sales leaders. You can claim this whole report completely for free if you go to ebster.com/COVID. That's ebster.com/COVID.
You're now tuned into the greatest.
This is Sales Ops Demystified.
X about me.
You have to be closing all the time.
Always be closing.
I love what I do. When you love what you do, you want to be the best at it.
The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Learn from thought leaders in sales operations. Actionable strategies from Sales Ops Ninjas. And now, your hosts, Tom Hunt and Henry Peacock. Sales Ops Demystified.
Hello and welcome to another very special episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. Now, today we're joined by someone who, yes, has the sales ops experience and expertise, but also came from not the dark side, but from the other side of customer support operations. Alicia, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
And so this is super interesting because since we started doing this podcast, we've had more people coming on and talking about revenue operations, right? Supposedly encompasses support as well. So this is going to be interesting to understand your background and experience there and how that relates to what you're currently doing in sales ops. So first question, Can I ask why you made that jump from support to sales?
Yeah, that's a good question. Kind of by accident. So I went to school briefly and just fell into different roles. I actually started in HR originally, recruited for a while. That role ended up, it was at a startup. I ended up kind of moving into this project coordinator role by chance. And one of my initial projects was migrating us from one applicant tracking system to the next. And so the technical project management piece of it was super interesting to me. And I just had an opportunity to join another HR ATS company. And they were hiring a CSM, which I had never heard of at the time. I mean, this was back in like maybe 2009, 2010. So that was a very foreign thing that I wasn't familiar with. But jumping into it was really interesting, right? So it's a ton of relationship management, it's project management. And that company, as it started to grow, I had the opportunity and just kind of fell into building out and leading a team. And for me, the post-sales journey was something that was completely new. I think it was really kind of new in the industry as well, right? Like you had traditional support, but this is beyond support, right? This is really trying to drive user adoption and ensure that customers are reaching their outcomes. So I did that for about 4 years at Compass. And then, as I started growing within that position, the operational piece was what was super interesting to me. So building out processes and just kind of understanding and working with finance, right? So then, 4 years later, kind of time to move on. I joined another small company called SourceClear, and they hired me specifically for customer success operations. So really building their playbooks from the ground up. They were acquired by CA, and that our portion of the business was going to be absorbed into Veracode at the time. And I had, a colleague that was working at Sauce Labs who said, "Hey, we're looking for a sales ops person. And what's really interesting is that you have CS experience. And so that might be a good blend for us to have as we're building out kind of our end-to-end journey." So it did kind of fall by accident, but I absolutely love it. I think I've learned a ton so far, and there's so much to learn, but it's kind of great experience to have end-to-end at this point. And it's kind of how I fell into it.
For sure. And I think there's one thing you said in one of the earlier roles about how you like the technical project management. Yeah, that was when you were a CSM, right? And yeah. I assume that was the part of the role that you were like, yes, I want to do more of this. And then that was the reason you moved from being a customer success manager to doing customer success ops. Is that correct?
Yeah. Cool. That and more specifically, as I was hiring a team, it was very evident that you need to have some sort of process that you can kind of rinse and repeat, right? And apply at scale for your customers as you're bringing them on. And, you know, for our system, it was an applicant tracking system. So, you know, agencies and internal HR companies would leverage our system. And so every process is different. And being able to know how to kind of put a process in place to get people up and running was something that we had to do and figure out quite quickly just to reduce our churn at the time.
Got it. And then as you quite rightly said, as part of this, well, as part of CFM and as part of customer success ops, you kind of are responsible for some selling anyway with the renewals, et cetera.
Yeah, definitely. I think for us, the point, we were really focused on mitigating churn and just ensuring that user adoption was really high. So we didn't really tie too much of the revenue to CSMs. Of course, like their book of business is directly tied to like their bonuses and whatnot. So there's incentive, obviously, to want to renew that base of yours. And then moving into SaaS as well, that was something that we really started to focus on, which I think for any initial company, when you're applying a customer success team, you know, I think the first and most important thing is really driving onboarding and understanding what those use cases are and what those outcomes are and how to measure those effectively. Because if you don't have onboarding, then trying to get that customer re-engaged later in the process is a lot of time and resources, and it proves to be pretty difficult if you don't get them kind of initially onboarded well.
Got it. And then fast forwarding today, what's the size of the sales team you're operating and what's the size of the ops team that you're working with?
Yeah. So at Influx Data, fairly new, this is week 4 for me, but I think we have about 15 and 20 sales reps right now, and it's split between commercial and enterprise and a strategic team. On the ops side, there's technically 2 of us. So there's the director of ops who I report into, but we kind of have a little rev ops team that we're working with. So that also bridges over to the 2 folks who are managing our SDR team, and then also our person who's running our lead gen team as well.
Got it. So are the FDRs within the 15 to 20 number?
No, they actually fall under the marketing umbrella.
Oh, cool. So you don't get involved with the FDRs?
Not technically. I mean, while they don't report into us, I think so far, just in the short time I've been here, we're pretty cohesive. Marketing and sales partners really well together. So we're constantly talking about, you know, the SDRs metrics and what they're doing right now versus how that's impacting sales, especially given the current climate. So there's a lot of collaboration that happens there.
Got it. And as you mentioned that, since I assume now everyone's remote, is there any, like, what's changed? Are you using any different tools or any different processes to ensure like the team culture and to ensure productivity?
Yeah, our people ops team is pretty amazing. So I think like everyone, we're leveraging Slack and Zoom like crazy. So they're getting really creative just on, we have a daily stand-up every single day, which I strongly encourage for companies. It's a great way to just kind of stay in contact with everyone. And, you know, even then we're doing themes. Last week it was like, bring your pet on your Zoom for the morning or bring your child. After one of the meetings, the ones where we had bring your child to work day, someone hosted like a drawing class, you know, or I forget what else we have, you know, virtual happy hours, a lot of the stuff that people are just trying to do to stay engaged and really just encouraging people to like take a break from work, make sure that you're connecting with individuals. Isolation is a real thing. And so we want to just make sure that the team is happy and connected.
Got it. Now, I know I'm putting on the spot because you've only been with Influx Data for a month, but is there anything that you've done that has driven productivity or improved the lives of the reps?
I'd love to say that I have, but it's so soon. What I did do and what we're probably going to start doing more regularly, obviously each quarter, our VP right now and my boss is the director of ops, like they're putting together kind of these EBRs to kind of say, how did we wrap the quarter and whatnot. What I used to do at Sauce Labs with my CRO is we would put these big retrospectives together quarterly and also annually to just show like, how are we trending? What can we start to look at? What are those specific behaviors that kind of stand out? So that's something that I actually just finished up. And so we're going to start kind of taking some of those pieces along with their current EBR and put a new template together. One that can be leveraged internally with the executive team to kind of share abroad, but two, also just different pieces to share with the board as well, right? And starting to pick up on areas where we could improve our sales efficiency.
Now tuned into the greatest.
This is Sales Ops Demystified.
Hello, sales ops people. Tom here. I'm recording this because we literally just launched what we believe to be the most comprehensive collection of sales ops insights. We've created the sales ops handbook that you can get at ebster.com/sales-ops-handbook. And what we essentially did is from our first 30 interviews, we collated all of the best insights from people such as Jeff at Intercom, from people at DocuSign, Lucid, Oracle, and Crowdcube. And we've crammed them into an approximately 45-page ebook, which, as I said, we believe to be the most comprehensive collection of sales ops wisdom in the world. So you can go to ebster.com/sales-ops-handbook, and you can get that for simply entering your email address.
Got it. And I may be showing my ignorance here, but EVR or EBR, what does that stand for?
Executive Business Review.
I haven't heard that before. Executive.
Oh, yeah.
This is something that you give to the board or to investors and leadership.
So the EVR, typically it can be used internally and externally. Like for the sake of my last company, we used to kind of come up with a big one, and it not only just entailed stuff that was specific to sales, but as we kind of grew and we continued partnering with marketing and partnering with CS, was it became this huge presentation of kind of how did marketing do with their metrics as far as pipeline generation, of that, how much of that was pipeline contribution, what happened to that pipeline during the quarter, and what happened to our wins, and then therefore, like, where did our churn come in with CS? And also, how many customers do we onboard and what's the success of that, right? And so what happens with that is, like, it starts creating this very natural cohesion and collaboration between those departments. And when we start presenting it together, it really holds people accountable. It's easier to kind of see the kind of end-to-end flow from marketing all the way through CS. And it just organically creates this, like, very free-flowing river, if you could say. So that's something that I think a lot of companies should use. I think it's really easy to kind of get siloed and just focus on your org and your metrics, but how does that impact the rest of the business? So something I'm encouraging Influx to do. I think they're doing it in some ways, but just to expand on that, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can cut data. And so we're kind of, that's just something we're starting to explore.
Got it. That's super interesting. So what I think you're saying is that by different teams coming together to produce this report and presenting the information together, it means you have, instead of departments being like pulling against each other, you have more likely to have the departments pulling together.
Right. Yeah, you see the effects, right? Like, so if marketing is crushing it and they're giving us all these leads, but for some reason we're not making our number, then it's on sales and marketing to kind of partner together and say, well, that's quite interesting, right? What's happening with our pipeline? Is there something with the data integrity? Is there something with our qualification criteria? Like, why are these falling out, or are they getting pushed out? So those are things that you can start, you know, that's just an example, but those are things you can start to consider as far as how each organization is impacting another. If CS is having a really poor time onboarding, is it because there's a poor handoff and not enough information that's being fed from sales to CS? So, I have found that that's been a tremendous improvement within my last company, and something I definitely encourage, you know, not to just report independently, but report as an organization and just together.
For sure. I mean, at EFTA, we have the sales and marketing team sat together, but then we have our CF team over in San Diego. And so it's very much like sales and marketing can tackle those challenges together. But then sometimes the communication is just left good, right? Because when we're in the office anyway, CS was over on the West Coast. So that's something that we should be looking at. Next question. If you could only track one sales-related metric for the rest of your career, which would you choose?
Oh, Lord. that's a good question. One sales metric.
Or to take off the pressure, it can just be your favorite one.
My favorite sales metric? How many opportunities have been closed? One.
Yes.
I think that's the one that excites everyone the most.
Agreed. That's the simple. Because I ask this question. Sometimes we get like really super complex, like advanced metrics that no one's heard of because they like show some tiny inefficiency in the process. But then here we're just like,
just show me the one.
Yeah, how many deals? Okay, cool. The sales forecasting process at Influx Data, is that down to you and your ops director, or do you involve finance? How does that process work?
I think it's a little bit of both, right? So, and I'm still kind of wrapping my fingers around it. And so I can kind of speak both from my last company and from what I somewhat understand where we're at right now. Obviously, we're taking a look at our future quarters pipeline, right? And then we also need to apply our sales capacity and the quota that's been deployed there. So there's so many different ways that you can kind of take it into account. But I think more so we kind of have this bottoms-up approach, right? Like, how much do we currently have sitting in commit? How much do we have sitting in, and I think we call it call, but like your best case, it'd be commit, most likely, in your best case. We'll call it those three. So your top two, we're kind of taking into consideration, like there's a strong likelihood that we should anticipate for that pipeline to close at the end of the quarter. And then from your best case, there's a few things that you may be able to call out, like maybe some large deals that you think you can push over the fence. So we do just kind of the typical bottoms-up approach. And then obviously the board has to approve if we haven't already had our forecast laid out in front of them just yet, but it's a little different the way that we do it here versus what I'm used to. But for this, for the most part, it's pretty similar.
Got it. And then a final question, who has inspired or educated you the most in your actually sales ops or support ops career?
I would say two people. I would say Tucker Calloway, who was the CRO, and Carolyn Beck, who actually brought me on initially at Sauce Labs. You know, from them, I worked pretty closely with Carolyn initially when I started Sauce Labs. And while she didn't have a sales background either, she's actually now a VP of marketing for the EMEA team and Sauce. She taught me quite a bit, you know, and brought me on and really just gave me a lot of autonomy and walked me through everything. And then working with Tucker specifically, you know, as the CRO, not only did he own sales, but he owned pretty much all of go-to-market, less like the actual marketing team. So anyone who was customer facing, he had them all. And I think collectively it was kind of interesting for both of us to kind of go through sales ops together. It wasn't necessarily a role he had leveraged a ton previously. So there was a lot of like trial and error between the two of us, but to support someone at that level and really understand like how we're reporting to the board and how we're forecasting and the things to really look at through these retrospectives really, really helped me grow. And it's been great to be able to bring some of my learnings and findings to Influx as well, just in comparison. So I think the two of them, and then there's one other person at Okta, Mehdi. He runs one of the sales and strategy teams there, and he's just incredible, super smart. Okta's a huge, huge company. So, you know, the things that he's doing as far as forecasting and scaling, I think is quite impressive. So actually I gave you three people. I cheated.
Yeah. So it's Tucker Holloway, Carolyn, and then I didn't catch the third person's name.
Mehdi runs Okta, yeah.
Got it. Awesome. Okay, cool. Alicia, thank you so much for the insights. Here's a couple of things that I took out. I have two pages of notes here. I think I'm not sure this is something you said, but the I think you mentioned when somebody, the person at Source Labs wanted to bring you on, I think their point about getting visibility of the post-sale operations being valuable for their cohesive viewpoint. And I think that was that's a very good point and a very good move probably by the Source Labs team to bring someone on who has the more holistic view. And then the obviously very like simple but effective metric that we selected I'm not sure if I've had that. I've done 80 interviews, right? And I'm not sure if anyone's just said, number of deals closed. So I think the message there.
The obvious answer, and everyone else has such a greater thoughtful answers.
No, not at all. The message is that we have to focus on what matters.
Yeah. What answers have you gotten for that?
Oh, so many different answers. Like I've had to like spell out mathematical formulas. One that I actually quite liked, pipeline velocity. Like there's like a formula for that. Right. And so These are like more slightly advanced ones, but actually the only reason we're doing any of these is to close the deals. Right. So that totally makes sense. Alicia, thank you so much for coming on.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It was such a pleasure speaking with you, and I hope you're staying safe and healthy and happy out there.